Welcome to the For Those Who Inquired podcast. I'm your host, Edward Marlowe, and a deep sigh here. Let's see, Neil Bradley in the house here in my kitchen in Murray, Kentucky. Let's see, last time I saw you, I'd like to say it was a long, long time ago, but it really wasn't. It was January 6th. It was MVC Eve, the eve of the MVC announcement for Murray State Athletics. And since then, we've seen a hell of a lot of basketball.
Wow. So January 6th, the last time I saw you, and my luck ran out tonight.
Yeah, the incident chart.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you're at work and it's like 0 days without an accident, you've erased it. It's the zero.
Dang.
Your luck's run out.
It was bound to, though. It was a good stretch. Had a good run, and then it happened.
Oh, I'm like a bad lottery ticket. I'm always there. It is wild to think, Neil, in the 3 decades that you have been covering racer athletics, and particularly basketball, have you ever seen a stretch of 9 games in 20 days?
No. And the one specifically where Matt and I had talked about it on our coaches show was the 8 in 16 days. And, you know, realistically, you know, when you took a look at all where all you're going to play at Belmont, I mean, you can't realistically as a fan expect to win all those.
No.
You probably realistically 6, maybe 7, but you're probably going to lose one. I mean, because it's tough to win college basketball games, especially get into road games.
Right.
And the fact that the Racers did that, defeating Belmont in one of those on the road, beating Morehead State, a fantastic team, getting them at home, and finally have ways to win in some spots where they didn't shoot as well and had to do it with defense. Only one game where they didn't really defend great, and that was the one at Tennessee Tech. And in that contest, they made shots. Their offense came around. So they've had to find a variety of ways to do it. I think what we've seen is this is a team that is talented and versatile. They have inside and outside game. They don't have to win with the three. If they're not making it, they can win inside. If they are not getting inside shots, they can win outside. But we have found, ask Belmont, when both are clicking, this is a deadly team to be playing it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the interesting thing for me, too, is you see the gauntlet these guys have run. McMahon has said it twice in the last 4 games. This can't be the best this team is. And I wanted to pose that question right now. I don't want to look too far into the crystal ball or OVC tournament. This is one game, you know, coach speak, one game at a time, 1 week at a time, 1 hour at a time in certain situations. You don't want to look too far ahead, but you take a look at this scenario. Let's extrapolate slightly here. McMahon keeps saying this can't be our best. What is the Racers' best? Like, what is? Because obviously you can't shoot 100%. You cannot out-rebound a team 33-5. You can't shoot 75% from three and 75% from the game. Or can you? What is this team's best if you had to describe that, Neil?
I think what he means by that is consistency, because we've seen multiple games during this stretch where the three-point shot hasn't fallen. And I mean really bad sometimes.
Drastic.
I don't mean, tonight we only made 32%, 34%. I mean bad.
Droughts.
That's the area that they need to take care of. Shore that up to where when they have a bad night, it is 32, 34%, something like that. And then that they're more consistently in the 40s where they need to be, the mid-40s. And occasionally they're going to have that where they make more than they miss. So, you know, they're going to be over 50% from time to time. But I think they want more consistency there. But the good news is for them, the defense has been very consistent, as has the rebounding. I think they want the turnovers to be more consistent, and they've been better lately. That has been one area over the last 3 games where they have also improved a lot, winning the turnover battle, winning the points off turnover battles. But those are areas, I think, where he wants to see something night in and night out that's virtually the same. You know, 8 turnovers, 10 turnovers, no more than 12. Shoot 34% on a bad night from three, 52% on a good night. Always hover around 50% from field goal range. Out-rebound the opponent. and don't give up over 10 offensive rebounds. Those are things they've been very good at, and the thing that makes them, I think, the dangerous team as well, they're balanced offensively and defensively. They're really, really great on some nights on one side, great on the other night. When those two meet, this is a great basketball team, certainly a top 25 basketball team when both of those meet on the same night.
Well, you take a look at their offensive and defensive efficiency numbers through KenPom. They're both top 50, right now. And I think as we speak, I think right after the game, their KenPom was 37. I believe right now, I'll refresh it. We'll give you the freshest number possible, 36. And obviously, that's an ebb and a flow. Adjusted offense, 43. Adjusted defense, 50. Adjusted tempo, which is my favorite, by the way, you're one of the top offenses in the country, and your adjusted tempo is 175. This is a dangerous half-court basketball team. Obviously, we've seen great transition, as evidenced against Morehead State, turning those 15 turnovers into 20 points. That's just the Morehead game. But tempo-wise, you're not running and gunning trying to score 110 points a game, but you're still scoring north of 80 points per game because you're so efficient at these different levels of the game.
And a weird part, too, you have Juice Hill in the Morehead game. If you're Morehead State, you saw the game Juice had against Belmont. Like, we can't let him get loose on three. So right. They hold him to none. He went 0 for 5. He was bad. That's bad from three-point range, Ed. You can't do any worse than that.
Yeah.
So
you go 0 for 6, 0 for 7.
So you've shut Juice Hill down, right? Nah. No, he just goes inside and hits layups on you.
Mm-hmm.
Gets deep penetration. And when you cover him, he dishes it off for dunks and ends up with, I think, 5 or 6 assists, whichever it was. So he devastates you and doesn't make a three-point shot on the night.
Yep.
That is an amazing thing because we have not had a lot of guards who aren't NBA rookies of the year who could do things like that. Usually you lived and died with what they shot from the outside and when they got to the free throw line. And that's what you got out of them. And that's good. They'd get assists, wouldn't have that many turnovers, won a lot of games. But Juice has added a different element. You shut him out where he's not making threes, he's going to go inside, get points, dish it off. To me, that is what really makes this a very dangerous team is his ability to score inside for a little guy and from the outside. It's amazing.
His offensive rebound dunk against Morehead State, and we keep referencing the Morehead State game. That is the freshest in our mind, but I want to talk about this stretch of 9 games that you and I have observed in the last 20 days. I mean, it's absolutely wild the type of basketball that's been played. But yes, the amount of bounce in his step. Take a look at the Tech game. 20 points, 10 assists, 1 turnover. No turnovers. 0 turnovers at Tech. Win by 5. Tech kept making circus shot after circus shot after circus shot. I was on my way home from work and I just kept telling everybody, this is not a knock on any past teams or anything like that. But correct me if I'm wrong, Neil. Racer basketball was going into that game 49-39 at Eblen. Like, it's just one of those situations where Racer hoops has just not played well on the road at Cookeville for whatever reason. Basketball is basketball. It is a miraculous series of numbers and events that make things occur. But it's just hard to play there, first and foremost. It's kind of a trap game. Racers are trying to maintain a strong net, strong KenPom. They want at-large hopes. They want a championship, regular season, and OVC. So many different things in play. You lose there, hurts, especially when you're getting votes in the top 25. And Juice was able to do that at Tennessee Tech.
The Racers had won actually 8 of the last 10 games there, but there have been a lot of close calls, including John Morant, his final year with the Racers, 3:15 to go. They're down 5 points.
Mm-hmm.
Media timeout. Underrated comes the chant from the fans. Should have shut up. It's just like lighting him. Oh, really? Okay. Well, we saw how that turned out.
Right.
Then Isaiah Cannon's senior year, I saw, I believe, the worst game I've ever seen a Racer team play.
You and Dave Winder.
And win.
Yeah.
They won the game, but it was horrendous.
Was it 44-36?
Yes, something like that, 44-36. There were more turnovers than field goals made. It was horrendous. And one of my favorite stories is we won the game, so I felt comfortable saying this. I think we were heading for Jacksonville State the next morning, so we're on the bus after practicing at Tech, believe it or not, on a Friday morning. So we get on the bus. Dave and I are already there. The Cardinals had made some sort of a big trade or were about to make a trade. So we're talking baseball on the bus and back and forth. Don't have any idea what we're talking about. And Prohm was one of the last ones on the bus, and he sits down, and he's hearing us, and the bus is pulling away, and he goes, "Man, you guys talk baseball all the time. Here we are in the middle of basketball season and still talking baseball." He says, "I like baseball, but," he said, "in about 15 minutes, I'm ready to go." And I said, "Hey, that's how I felt last night, Coach." And I thought his assistant coaches were going to die laughing.
That's good.
And he had to ask me to repeat it. And, you know, had we lost, I would not have said that, but I felt pretty comfortable in saying it. But I thought Coach Small was actually going to die of a heart attack.
You had a 3-1 lead. You were fine. Yeah. At that point.
So it happens. It was ugly. Part of it. Guy who from Murray State, played at Murray State, Ken Peterson, who lived in Cookeville, and he told me after the game, he has since passed away, but he told me after the game, "That's the worst game I've ever seen a Murray State team play." He used to play.
Right.
So it was bad. Yeah, they still won. They had a good year that year, but, you know, it wasn't the year that they wanted. You know, you had Isaiah as a senior. And,
yeah.
But I got way off track here. Some of the great teams we've had really struggled to win there.
Yeah.
Most of the time they do, but it's a real struggle to get a victory down there. And last year was horrendous.
Horrendous.
Horrendous. One of the worst games you could imagine. Things didn't go well. Turnovers, Tech with points off turnovers. I think Tevin only had 5 points in the game. Just an ugly night. That, you know, the COVID year, I just circle that, and I'm just going to kick that aside. You know, call that.
Right.
What do you call that in golf? You get
mulligan.
There you go. You get a mulligan and not count that against anybody. Let's just move on to the next year.
Yep.
It's been a pretty good year so far.
Yeah, it's not been so bad. Want to bring up a few more numbers. We'll switch topics in a few minutes, switch gears, but certainly a few more things to undress here. First of all, want to give major congratulations to Tevin Brown. Not only has he become the school's leader in three-point shooting during this stretch of 9 games, he's now become the OVC all-time leader in three-point shooting. I know he's more than three-point shooting. We all know he's more than three-point shooting, but that's the first record he broke. And, you know, when he put up 90 three-pointers his freshman year, you think, oh, this is possible, because he did that, and you're like, well, that's his role. And as that role starts to develop, he'll switch into other things. No, he only has 72 made threes right now.
Mm-hmm.
We have 8 games to go in the regular season plus conference tournament time. 90 plus is totally possible for him this year.
Too. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it's wild to think how accurate he's been. And that last year, again, a comparison is the thief of joy, Matt McMahon, I definitely understand that. But even last year being a, quote, down year for him statistically, he still shot 37.5% from three. Just how good he's been at that shot is unbelievable to me.
Yeah, he is amazing. It was weighing on him more than I thought it was, because he came over, we did our post-game interview with him, and he just, before we got on the air, like, "I'm glad that's over." And he was. So, you know, you could see him smile when he made that third one. He knew on the Isaiah Cannon record that he broke as well. So it had weighed on him. And Tevin didn't have a bad night against Morehead State. He had a good night.
Mm-hmm.
But you had KJ Williams, who had just an unbelievable night, and Juice Hill as well. But Tevin was fantastic. Tevin also seems to be that guy that notices when someone else is hot, let's get him the ball.
Yep.
There's KJ. Let's get him the ball. You know, Juice Hill at Belmont. He's not one where I have to have mine. I have to lead the team or I'm going to be mad. I'm going to pout on the bench. He is the ultimate team player. As Matt says, he is a winner who also impacts winning. And it's just been a joy to watch him. I looked it up. I thought, gosh, he's shot it so well. He's made so many. I wonder how close he is to the national record. 509, Ed. 509. A guy from Wofford and a guy from Oakland at 508. Curry, 414, I think.
Ed
so,
Davidson.
So he's, but he's the OVC leader. Every time he makes a three, he adds to the Tevin Brown legacy.
You're right. And, you know, I'm not even going to look too far ahead. He's just a redshirt junior. You know, if he you know, pursues professional opportunities, great. If he doesn't, who knows? I'm not even going to those questions need not be answered at this moment.
Yeah, yeah.
You just embrace this season, continue to play, and see what happens next.
Yeah.
KJ Williams, and again, we're not going to break down all 10 players right now. There's no reason for that, but you know, obviously, this is a rotation that's gone about 9 and 10 deep a little bit, a couple of times. Let's get some Deontay Bostic.
And I'm glad you're bringing him up because I was getting ready to. So you go ahead.
Yeah, but KJ Williams, really quick, his last four games, Neil, 33-15 against Martin in a tightly contested game. That's a well coached team trying to figure their things out. Brand new entire roster, coaching staff, they got a complete remodel. For obvious reasons, tough reasons, but nonetheless, still need to maintain a Division I basketball program. Tennessee Tech, 21-11. Tennessee Tech, 20-13. And Morehead State, 21-9, including 10 of 12 points to take a commanding lead at that point, considering offense wasn't falling. Murray State made their last 8 shots against Morehead State. And, 5 of them were KJ straight at Janai Broome, who you want to talk about lighting a fire. Janai had been in KJ's face for most of the game. And I think KJ had had enough. But you look at this 4-game stretch, Neil, I don't know if I've seen a racer big man play that way in a long time.
It's been amazing. In the final 8 minutes, the under 8 media timeout on against Morehead State, put earmuffs on the kids for a second. KJ was in give me the damn ball mode. Mm-hmm. Give me the damn ball. Mm-hmm. And he got it. And every time something good happened, it was amazing. And you know, those of us who watch it, like, that's, he can play that way.
Yeah.
And he didn't do it against Bob the center.
No,
it was Janai Broome, preseason player of the year,
who's so good.
Yeah,
who is so good.
Top 10 in rebounding and block shots. Yeah, I mean, who let the dogs out? That's right.
That's how good KJ Williams is. Yeah, this is against Janai Broome, who, by the way, was averaging and still averaging nearly like a shade over 15 points per game, 11 rebounds per game, leads the conference in blocks per game, had 14-11-6 against the Racers. Like, he's a terrific basketball player.
Oh, yeah.
That's a terrific team. And what KJ did over about a 6.5-minute span was just like, not today. Maybe some other time, maybe when we go play you there, maybe in the OVC tournament, I don't know. Basketball is an awesome sport where anything can happen, but not this afternoon and not tonight in the CFSB Center. And that was interesting to see.
Yeah. We've seen flashes of that from KJ. Sometimes he isn't as consistent, but I'm telling you, the last 4 games, that's the point I was going to make. He continues that. There's your most valuable player of the league. If he continues playing like those 4 games.
Yeah.
Because if he continues playing like he has those 4, the Racers will win out.
Yeah.
That's a lot to ask. About 24 points a game, about 13 rebounds a game. That's a lot to ask.
It's a lot.
But if he delivers that, based on what the Racers normally can bring defensively and with the rest of their players, I'm telling you, they're not going to lose. I don't know how he's going to be able to do that continuously, but gosh, he was awesome.
This is an OVC team that in 10 games is shooting 46% from the field. They're only giving up 40% from the field, shooting 35% from 3, holding teams to 27%, shooting about 70% from the free throw line, which is obviously improved. They're out-rebounding teams by plus 10 in OVC play. Their assist-to-turnover ratio is 16-10, which boils down to 8-5. You know, there's definitely more assists and turnovers. They're averaging nearly 8 steals per game in conference play. Everybody's contributing, like I said, from 1 down to 9. We've seen DaQuan Smith have his moments. We've seen Carter Collins take on a leadership role, ceding minutes and offense to other guys. We've seen Jordan Skipper Brown. Had he not missed the 2 games for COVID protocol, I mean, he played extremely well against Morehead State, and he's played well getting back into his role. And you got 3 guys averaging 8, you know, 15 plus per game. And then you have Trey Hannibal, DJ Burns, Jordan Skipper Brown, DaQuan Smith, and Carter Collins all giving you 4 or more points per game in conference play. It's just
contributions from all over the place. That's maybe the one big takeaway that I have in this last nine games.
And when anything happens, like the last three games, DJ Burns, early foul trouble. So?
All three times.
You have to inject. It's been Nicholas McMullen and Trey Hannibal when they'll go with a smaller lineup because Skip wasn't available for a couple of the games. But here you get, well, it wasn't. He played against Tech at Tech, but you could tell he wasn't himself. Hadn't practiced all week, and it showed.
Right.
But you get a couple of days of practice under his belt, and then he looked like his old self again. But
7 points, five rebounds against Morehead State.
But somebody steps right in, so they're ready to go. DJ, it's okay. We got you. You're in some foul trouble. But when you have DJ on the floor, you have the number one offensive rebounder in the league. The number three offensive rebounder in the league is his teammate, KJ Williams. I mean, that's a lot of second chance points. If they're not putting it up and in, they're popping it out and they're knocking down a three. And right now, the Racers continue to win and they're not hitting threes at an amazing clip. I'm telling you, when that happens, they are going to pummel whoever they're playing that night, Ed. No one's going to beat them in this league when they're both falling.
Yeah. Last thing I'll mention about that, you take a look at the pummeling that we've already seen. We've seen the Southeast Missouri pummeling to open the conference slate, the at Eastern Illinois pummeling. They weren't shooting it particularly well, but they shot it well enough. They won that game by nearly 30. They pummeled Belmont when it all fell together, and the smaller lineup was extremely successful against Belmont. You pummeled Tennessee State, and you pummeled Eastern Illinois the second time at home when everything was
They only had seven players. You know, that really wasn't fair. So their season's over, right, Ed? They're done. We were talking after that game. They may not win a game. And what do? They've won back-to-back games.
Yep.
That's college basketball for you. That tells you you better be ready, because just because the Racers have a nice winning streak and they're 20-2 doesn't mean they're going to go 21-2.
No, it doesn't.
I mean,
because you still have to play
Austin
given.
Peay. Yeah.
You still have to play Austin Peay in Clarksville, and then they're coming here, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
Eventually, but this next week, it's SIUE
right.
for a home game.
That's right.
Yeah.
So I want to switch gears here to women's basketball. You, in those last nine games, you and I have seen a decent amount of women's basketball in this stretch as well. And you've got a team that is technically second in the OVC, two teams tied for first, so I guess they're third, but from a record perspective, you're a half game back of Belmont and Tennessee Tech. You've got a win over Tennessee Tech, a loss against Belmont, and you know, the other thing is you have a tough overtime loss at home against Eastern Illinois in this stretch, and a tough road loss again at Belmont, and then you the second game, you lost at home to Tech 65-62 in a nail-biter. That's how close this team is to be in, not just in the top three discussion, but the conference leader. I know that probably nibbles a little bit at Rochelle Turner and the team, but they've been playing some really, really good basketball in the last 2 weeks.
And Rochelle, I think she could have lived with it if Tennessee Tech was the better team, like, hey, they're just better than we are, nothing we can do about it. Then they went to Cookeville, and they hammered them.
Hammered.
I had to be sure that something wasn't wrong because we were unable to watch it at the moment. I was doing other things. The Racers had a game at home that night. And like, okay, something's obviously wrong with stat broadcast because it looks like
they're up
25 points early in the game. So, you know, you're wanting to like, I'm going to restart this because something isn't being entered correctly. And I mean, I was able to talk to the folks at Tech and they just said it was just one of those nights. No matter what the Racers did, it was good. No matter what we did, it was bad, and it was just one of those nights. So, but the thing that I think Rochelle has done with this team, she's recruited to the point and used very good strategic recruiting to get this team to a point where they're going to compete for a championship. When they show up in Evansville, Ed, they're not going to show up hoping to win a game or hoping to win a couple. Hopefully that's all they'll need to win if the standings fall correct. They're going to show up expecting to win the tournament. I mean, it'll be the one game at a time kind of thing, but she's going to have that team in their head expecting to go to the NCAA tournament, and that's good. That's strides ahead from where they've been in the past at times.
Number one thing that I want to take away, and again, just talking OVC numbers, Bria Sanders-Woods is back. The Hyphenator's back.
Yeah.
You know, we saw her take a step back in non-conference play, but she's played all 10 games in the OVC and already has one start under her belt, playing about 17 minutes a game, not shooting it great yet. I know the knee brace is a thing. Mm-hmm. ACL is a tough, tough thing to come back from.
and you got to work into that. And Bria even said, Saturday when they just pummeled Morehead State, which they're in the middle of a rebuild as we speak. But, you know, Bria said, you know, this bothered me, you know, I'm not gonna make excuses, but not used to a knee brace. I'm a speedster. I'm a downhill player. She can score at all three levels, decent free throw shooter, decent jump shooter, and a decent slasher.
Yeah.
When you got a knee brace on, that's tough, you know, to be as effective as you once were. She had a pretty solid freshman year.
She did.
And, you know, and that was one of those situations you thought that 8-9 points per game would turn into 10-11 points per game this year. She's had a couple of glimpses of that, particularly in this last game against Morehead, but that hasn't been there yet. And again, she could be their sixth starter,
yeah,
quote, so to speak. That's crazy to think about.
Yeah, I think some of that is and it really impacts a player like her who uses quickness and speed. Big person inside, probably not as much, but with her, it really does. It's sort of like taking someone like that who isn't injured and put a backpack full of bricks on them and expecting them to play the same. Well, they're just not going to. They're not going to have the mobility, not going to have the speed, not going to have the quickness that in their mind all the time, oh, I'm going to make this dribble and cut, and I'm going to go by them, get a layup, or they may foul me, and I'll hit the free throws. And it's just something that she's having to live with right now. But she certainly does add a lot to the team, a lot of depth to the team. I know Rochelle, I haven't talked to her in a little while, but if they can get the turnovers under control,
right,
get them 10 and under, they do so many things well that they're going to win a lot of games and be in a position to win an OVC championship.
Crazy thing, and I want to bring up, we've talked a lot about the men. I want to give some due credence to the women here. You take a look at, they've got right now in OVC play, they've got four women that are averaging in double figures. So you, Caitlin Young, obviously doing her thing. She's averaging 20.5, 7 rebounds per game right now in conference play. You got Macy Turley averaging nearly 13, 3.3. She leads the teams in assists in OVC play. Hannah McKay, 12-6. Alexis Burpo having a superb year at 10.7. She leads the team in rebounding in OVC play, and is the OVC still today second leading rebounder. You and I talked about that the last time we spoke. That's remaining the same, and she's got almost a 3-to-1 assist to turnover ratio. You take a look, can you get four racers?
Mention her free throws.
Oh, yes, absolutely mention her free throws. I tweeted about that the other day. That's probably the most improved.
Remember in high school?
Yeah.
Like, oh, no.
50%.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
You got Burpo at the line.
In OVC play, she's 20 for 26.
Yeah. And didn't accidentally happen. She worked her ass off.
This team is in OVC play shooting 83% from the free throw line.
Yes.
As a team.
Yeah.
Maybe they're the ones that are coaching the men.
I don't know.
I.
But you sit and watch them.
83%.
Yeah. And it's like perfect form after perfect form. I'm always surprised if Macy ever misses one. It looks like a robot. Here's how you would teach someone to shoot a free throw. Doom, doom, shh. And then Caitlin Young, perfect every time.
Yep.
I don't know that she ever alters anything.
So Caitlin is shooting 94% from the free throw line. Macy Turley is shooting 95%. This is in OVC play.
Yeah,
again.
And I promise, both. I don't know Caitlin. I've never spoken with her.
95.
But I know Macy. She's not happy because I've asked her the question before. She's not happy that she made them. She's mad that she missed them.
Yeah.
She's furious that she missed those.
Hannah McKay is 77%. Alexis Burpo, again, 20 of 26, 77%. Bria Sanders-Woods has made 15 of 19. That's 79%. Belle West has made all four of hers. Jada Black, 3 of 5. Case and Connor, 3 of 6. Charlie Settle, 2 of 2. Like, people are getting to the line. Lex is not, doesn't take a ton. She's a turret. She shoots a ton of layups and three-pointers and not a ton of in-between or a lot of driving there. She's 3 of 6. She's not taking that many. It's wild. But, I mean, Lex has also erupted from three in half the games in OVC play right now and is 15 for 35 from the arc.
They get the turnovers under control, Ed. With that kind of free throw shooting, you have a lead in the fourth quarter. You're unbeatable. You're just not going to be beat.
And the thing about it is, I think the fourth quarter, Rochelle has said it time and again, it's probably their worst quarter of the year. For whatever reason, they play intense defense. And I don't want to say the defense gets bad in the fourth quarter or that they take a break or get lackadaisical, but teams have had a penchant of coming back. And earlier this week, you almost had SIUE. Murray was up 12 with two to go. And then SIUE put together a comeback that required Macy Turley to win at the buzzer. You know, and they had to stop a three-point play from happening to win that game on the road. Key win. Win's a win.
Yeah.
No matter what. W's a W, and that's okay. But they gave up 82 points. And this is a team that hadn't given up more than 71 in these first 10 conference games. I mean, they gave up 71 twice. Both times to Eastern Illinois, which is a good offense. Won one game, lost the other one in overtime. So to give up 82 probably wasn't exactly the happiest moment for Rochelle Turner, but it was a victory nonetheless because number five came through. The ceiling for this team, it's another high ceiling. I mean, you've already mentioned it. You have a women's basketball program that is, check my math on this, it's 7-3 in OVC play and overall 15-6. And that's really, really good basketball right now. That's, you just have to hope that the next eight games, which is going to include another Belmont matchup, and you still got to play P.
Well, P's good.
P's really good.
Yeah, they're flirting with first place as well.
It's interesting because the men's basketball fight is Moorhead, Murray State, Belmont right now, with fourth being, at the moment, Neil, fourth is SEMO.
Yeah.
Which is wild.
Could have been solidly fourth had they held on and defeated Moorhead State.
You're right.
But
yeah, if they had, and then Moorhead State would have been two games back with Saturday's loss. Didn't happen. Congrats to Moorhead State. They won a key road game, you know, at the Show Me Center. That's a tough place to win.
Yeah.
And as
Scholar Potter said, we're number one. At the end of that game, he told her, hey, we are number one.
Yeah.
But
now they're 8-1.
But they are 8-1 now.
He knew how many losses they had.
But a lot of basketball still yet to play.
Yeah, absolutely. Know, and that's the thing with the women is you're, like I said, you're 7-3. What is the next step for them? You mentioned the turnovers. You probably want to see the three-point percentage be a little more consistent.
Right.
They too have had a couple of games where they just, for instance, against Eastern Illinois, that overtime loss, you know, you had three guards combined for, I want to say, like, five for 35 or something. Like,
it was awful.
Bria couldn't shoot. Macy struggled. Lex struggled. Hannah McKay struggled. She was, like, 2 for 9 at one point for hitting the layup to help send it to overtime. And then Caitlin Young did make the layup to send it to overtime. Caitlin was the only one that could score in that game, you know, and even she had some struggles. So, you know, but Eastern Illinois, not a bad team. They're in the middle of the pack.
No,
that was just a tough home loss. Very similar to the Tech home loss. Just that painful, just one or two possessions go our way, and we're looking at 9-1 instead of 7-3. But you got to put that behind you, and that's something that this team is trying to do.
Yeah, yeah. Should be a terrific game against Austin Peay. Last time that we will be playing there as a conference game, and I guess the last time we'll play in that arena. I believe the new one's supposed to be ready the next year. Is that correct?
I think that's right.
And from what I understand, we're going to continue Murray State and Austin Peay playing once a year. It'll be, I guess, an annual Battle of the Border matchup. But I think that's terrific that the two schools continue to play. It's an easy one to get to, good for fans. So for football and basketball, I think they'll continue that.
I love the idea of Austin Peay continuing to be a non-conference rival, Battle of the Borders part of it, but just in general, it's good for the A-Sun and it's good for the Missouri Valley. I think it's a it's a great relationship builder where other teams can get involved. Mm-hmm. I mean, from a geographic standpoint, Austin Peay, I don't want to say fits the Missouri Valley. I think they're going to be happy in the A-Sun. I'm just saying they can play some of those teams, and be the better for it, so to speak. Wanted to slightly talk about that. Conference realignment. You and I have addressed the Missouri Valley Conference ad nauseum. There's a lot going on with all of that. University of Illinois Chicago has recently been admitted into the conference. That's a team the Racers, both the men and the women, I believe, have played a little bit in the past basketball-wise. We knew Chicago was going to be part of the footprint. It seemed almost likely that UIC was going to be the go. It was just a matter of when. When was the Missouri Valley going to bring them in? And UIC got that last invite. It's like, we're going to 12,
and Chicago, you're in the Flames starting July 1. We're ready to roll. Now that we see what the Missouri Valley footprint is for the next, let's just say, a couple of years, because time is...
That's probably all you could say.
Yeah, who knows right. anymore with the possible seismic changes mm-hmm. ahead. When you look at UIC as part of this full, robust field for the Missouri Valley, what are your thoughts about adding the Flames to the Missouri Valley?
Well, I think it's good. It has the Chicago footprint that I think they like in terms of the Valley. They actually don't really lose the footprint. You lose a lot in terms of good team, though. There is no comparison between Loyola Chicago and UIC at the moment. Who knows? That might change somewhere down the road.
Right.
But I think it's very good to have. You get one of the largest cities in the United States as part of your league. That's pretty good. Something we haven't had when we had the Ohio Valley Conference with Nashville, basically about as good as there is, and nothing wrong with Nashville. But I think it'll be good. I don't know if they're going to do any sort of a division play. It's kind of set up that they sort of could do it if they wanted to.
The geography's there.
Yeah, if they want to. But I don't know. But it seems like they're ironclad solid on going to 20 games. Looks as if it's going to be a 20-game schedule. There's a variety of ways they could do that. So I'm not really sure what they're doing. I do know this. They are working on the schedules right now. There's a company that they have that takes care of the scheduling for them. So those will probably be out soon. Now, they likely won't be made public for a good while.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But they'll be available, and they'll tweak this, tweak that, I'm sure, just like any other league does, and get the schedule they want, present it to TV, and then once TV's made their selections, then they will – move on, and the public will get a chance at that. But be really anxious to see exactly what it's going to be, because there's no pattern, because there's new teams.
Right.
I do know this, as of right now in men's basketball, there are no travel partners.
Which I love.
But that could change.
It could. And the presidents could get together and say, we don't want to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. So that could change. The women, they do have travel partners. So you do pair up for women's basketball and you don't for men's basketball. I don't know if that's something where they're going to get that on the same page or continue to do it as they are. But generally, you play Wednesday, Saturday, or Wednesday, Sunday. There are a few Thursday games, an occasional Friday game. But Wednesday, Saturday is your primary days to usually play conference games.
And here's the thing, and I know necessarily Murray maybe wouldn't be too big of a fan of this, but I love Sunday games.
I do too. The afternoon games.
Especially. I love an afternoon Sunday game. It's sleepy Sundays anyways. You get out of church. You go grab some lunch. You come home. You start some laundry. Maybe you catch a nap.
Yeah.
Oh, what am I doing at 2:30? I'm watching the NFL or I'm watching tennis or whatever. Let's go down and see what the Racers are doing. Oh, they're hosting Valparaiso. I loved, you want to go back to that 2011-12 stay on your wall season, nod to Jeff Bidwell and his excellent show that continues to air on WPSD Local 6. And you have this situation where that Murray State Dayton game is one of my favorite games of all time attending as a student. I absolutely just loved, I didn't love the fact that I was a 26-year-old student that year, but we all make mistakes. But going to that game on that Sunday afternoon, that was Archie Miller and the Dayton Flyers in town for the Racers on a Sunday afternoon. Sleepy little Sunday afternoon in Murray, Kentucky. And I loved it. I absolutely had a great time at that basketball game. I've remembered that all these years. But you go back real quick. I did want to mention Illinois-Chicago currently in the Horizon. That's going to leave an open hole for the Horizon at this point. Furthermore, and I think the really interesting thing about it, does the Horizon pick somebody out of the OVC to try and come in and fill that gap? Or do they try and go get somebody out of the A-Sun that looks like it's a little overstuffed right now? Do you scalp another team out of Conference USA that says, I don't know if this is working out. We need to go somewhere that's a little bit more stable. The Horizon, for all of its, I don't even want to say faults, but for the fact of its geography being a little bit sporadic, is not a bad league.
No.
Some would say it's tangential to the Ohio Valley Conference. I'm not necessarily sure I agree. I think they just have a different scheme, different format. But you take a look at what the Horizon needs to do. Who do they go get? I don't know. And furthermore, that brings a question. If they snag another OVC team, what does the OVC
do. I don't want to look too terribly far ahead, but I would have to think the Horizon League would be potentially exploring somebody. I would think. I could be totally wrong on that, but
yeah, I think so. Well, you always want an even number of teams in your league. An odd number makes for all sorts of problems. In football, you can get by with it, but not in basketball and the other sports, because that means somebody's always going to have a night off.
Yeah.
You can't have one of those nights or days when everybody's playing. And that makes it very difficult when you have the odd number. I'm sure they're looking for somebody, but I still look at that league and sick at my stomach. You have Northern Kentucky there. They should have done everything that they could to get them in the OVC.
You and I have talked about that. And if you'd done that,
this stuff might not have ever happened. It'll probably work out for everyone. Everyone has to do what's best for them.
The same with North Alabama.
But to me, opportunities were there, and for whatever reason, passed by. And in Northern Kentucky, they end up in the Horizon League. You take a look at that. It's not a bad league. I'm not saying that, but it doesn't really seem like a good fit for them in terms of travel.
Yeah, no, I definitely understand. So going to be really interesting to see how that all shakes out. Before we digress too much further, I do want to stay a little bit on some racer basketball. This guy, I don't know if you know him, Neil. His name's John Morant.
He used to ride the bus with Demetrius, by the way.
Demetrius?
Yeah.
One Demetrius?
Yeah.
Jamil Morant, man. It's unbelievable. I tweeted this the other day, and you know, he's on his way to superstardom, but yeah,
on his way.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm using that lightly. I mean, he's there. It is wild, Neil. On Thursday, this is why I'm bringing this up. It's not just us, you know, opining and you know just thinking of the good old days. Which don't get me wrong, I'm definitely thinking of the good old days, but. You know, in a five-year span, Ja put together two terrific years at Murray State University, was drafted, you know, Memphis Grizzlies, Rookie of the Year, and in year three as a starter. Thursday afternoon, the NBA, through fan voting, coach voting, and player voting, selected Ja Morant as a starter for the 2022 NBA All-Star Game in Cleveland.
Well, based on his numbers, that doesn't shock me.
Phenomenal.
But I realize sometimes you think that's tough to do. And then a couple of weeks ago, I saw the top 10 selling jerseys as he's in the top 10.
Yeah.
Mind-blowing. That's tough. That's for veterans. Come on, rookies don't get young guys. I mean, I realize he's not a rookie now, but you don't get young guys on that list. And he's on it.
He's there.
He
was number seven the first half of the season.
Yeah. It is absolutely amazing. And now he's going to get more publicity. And, it's not like he's playing for a bad team anymore.
Nope.
They're good.
They're 35-17.
Yeah, they're really good. How good they'll be when the end of the season rolls around, I don't know. But they're really good right now. And we talk about this, Ed. You look at what he's done over the last several games. I know you're the numbers guy. You probably have them in front of you. But
I've got a few.
But it's just crazy. These are the best players in the world on most of these nights who are game planning to stop him,
mm-hmm.
and they can't do it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they are absolutely. There's a couple numbers I definitely want to bring up, but they are absolutely selling out in a lot of these situations. And the thing about it is they're selling out, but, like, they can't sell out. Memphis has built a team, at least for the immediacy, but, I mean, look at how young they are as a squad. And this is a team that still isn't playing with Dylan Brooks, by the way. Brooks came back, was healthy, now isn't playing, is injured, and still has to get back into this rotation. It's unbelievable how good they've been, even without Dylan Brooks. And then Ja, when Ja was out, they were winning. It's Ja. I'm not taking anything away from him. I'm saying that Kleiman and Coach Taylor Jenkins, they've built this robust rotation of guys who just can do a little bit of everything. And so that's kind of the number one that just came out today. ESPN Stats Info came up with this terrific stat. And it's not one of those, well, it's if this, if that, if that, if that. No, this is a legitimate stat. Ja Morant has 13 games. This is, mind you, in the first 52 games, 30 games left in the regular season. Ja's 13 games with 20-plus points in the paint this season. 2019-2020, Russell Westbrook
did that through the entire season. 2005, 2006, Dwayne Wade did that throughout the entire season. We have 30 games to go. It's only the third time that a point guard has done this and been this successful in the paint in the last 25 years of the NBA.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's from ESPN Stats and Info. That sounds like a nuanced stat, but when you realize that Ja is 6'3 and 180 pounds and is one of the NBA's not decent at scoring in the paint, one of the best, if not the best, just based on his size alone. One of the number one questions you and I asked, and it wasn't necessarily us asking it, it was just we knew it was out there, we brought it up. Could he score in the trees of the NBA?
Yeah, yeah.
The answer is emphatically yes.
Yeah.
He can score against anybody. I mean, last night, so after being named, you talked about the numbers, after being named All-Star, starter, Ja simply put up back-to-back games, 30 points, 10 assists, and 10 rebounds against Utah.
They call those triple-doubles.
That's a triple-double. His first of the season. Exactly right. And then he followed that up with another 30-point game against Washington. He shot 15 for 27, 4 for 8 from the arc, by the way. 34 points, 2 assists, 3 rebounds, 1 turnover.
Goodness.
In his last 5 games, Neil, he has scored, and one of those was a loss against Dallas in which literally everybody was out. He has scored 38, 35, 41, 30, and 34. That's his last week.
What was it, the Lakers game where they hit a Jackson hits a corner 3 to win that? Who were they playing?
That was at Denver.
At Denver. Okay.
Yeah.
And to give you an idea, you mentioned the paint. So Denver knows, here he comes. He's coming. Mm-hmm. We got three guys. You're not getting in here, buddy.
Not today.
You're not scoring. So he jumps in the air.
Yep.
You're not scoring.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right. I'm not. He is.
Yeah.
And he whips it over there. And you can see the guy up on the top of the wing go, uh-oh.
I made a bad decision.
Because he's up top and Jackson's wide open in the corner. And you see him start to dig and it's too late.
Yeah.
Swish. But he did that because he drew all of his, like, you're not scoring.
Yeah.
I don't have to.
It's wild, man.
Ask, it's like, did you guys not watch, you know, Marquette? They tried the stuff like that.
They did.
It's like, he just corner, lob, dunk. It's unbelievable.
And that's the wild thing is, like, we've saw it at the college level, and now it started to take on the NBA level. People wondered if it would work at the college level under Matt McMahon's system, under Shane Nichols, James Cain's recruitment. You know, this is what they saw. This is, you know, is this what – you know, Tim Kaine development, you know, all of these guys, Casey Long development, what so on and so forth. You had people wondering, could that convert to the NBA level and that style of play?
Yeah.
The answer is yes.
Yeah.
And the answer is Memphis might actually have more than one first round draft pick to wrap around what they have now.
Yeah.
Because of the way things are unfolding.
And Ed, I didn't know the answer to that. I don't follow the NBA closely enough to know from a personnel standpoint if this will work or that will work. I didn't know. As I've told you many times, I'm glad there was not social media when Larry Bird came out of Indiana State. It's like, that guy will never do any good.
Yep.
He's a slow white guy. What's he going to do?
Everything.
But thankfully, there's no social media and there's no like, hey, I saw you tweeted this, idiot. So, because I would have. Thankfully, well, it didn't exist back then.
You want to talk about, and I know this, I've always read that Larry Bird was one of the greatest trash talkers of all time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I've heard that too.
Not named Michael Jordan or Reggie Miller. And I would love to have seen Larry Bird's social media in the late 80s or nearly 90s.
Yeah, that would have probably been a lot of fun.
Just a couple of quick breakdowns before we let everybody get out of here. You talk about this wraparound of guys. Ja's player efficiency rating this year is north of 25, which, by the way, is really good. He's played in 39 games. Obviously had to miss, you know, some. Dylan Brooks has only played the 20. You have Desmond Bane, who's taken that leap and is averaging 17 points per game. You have Jaren Jackson, who defensively is averaging more than 2 blocks per game, now averaging 16 points per game. He's starting to take that step. They've got Brandon Clark back in the rotation after a little bit of a break. De'Anthony Melton is in the rotation. Tyus Jones is in the rotation. Kyle Anderson, Zaire Williams, Steven Adams. John Conchar. These are all guys that have played in 30-plus games. And, I mean, we're not done. I mean, Xavier Tillman has appeared in 38 games. Jarrett Culver, who they traded for in the offseason, didn't know what they were going to do with him. He's played in 23. Killian Tilly, 31. Santi Aldama, first-round draft pick this year, or a draft pick this year. I believe he was early second round. Has played in 27 games. Shaq Buchanan played two. Like, they are rotating guys in. Eves Pons from Tennessee has played in seven. They have rotated in just this influx of youth and talent and all these different guys that all do different things. They started John Conchar last night. I mean, against who did they just play last night?
Washington.
I had it right here. Yeah, Washington. Sorry, yeah. They had Conchar starting, and again, they don't have Dylan Brooks back. It's just wild, and they're using them to their advantage all around Ja Morant. He's clearly the centerpiece. Currently on the MVP ladder, I believe he's 7 or 8, where the NBA maintains its,
right,
like, where, you know, oh, here's where we think the race is. And to think that he is year three, he is in the top 10 conversation for MVP. Now, it's probably going to be Nikola Jokic or,
oh, sure,
Steph Curry or Giannis or LeBron. LeBron's playing out of his mind when he's on the floor. You have all of these guys that are, like, probably going to get that conversation. But Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
But, like, Ja's in that conversation.
Yeah.
You know, and that is just, I mean, it wasn't that long ago, man. We were watching him being this spindly, wiry kid that was a terrific freshman at Murray State. And I think that's my biggest point, yeah, is that in this 5 years, he has just taken the stratosphere. It's like a rocket ship to the moon. Like, and where is it going after that?
Yeah. Well, if you want to do Ja a favor, and the Grizzlies a favor, please get folks online to tell him he'll never be an MVP. Get that started.
Yeah.
Because then he will be.
Yeah.
I've seen enough. It's just unbelievable how he takes motivation. He does it in a game. He'll do it online. Those knuckleheads who said when they were winning and they didn't have him, we'd be better off without him. Oh, my gosh. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But all it does is motivate him.
Yeah.
Now, MVP this year, it is really a tall task.
It's a tall task.
It's a tall task. So
it's possible.
But in the conversation.
It's a tall task.
If you'd said when he was drafted, he'll be in the MVP conversation within 3 or 4 years. Like, no, general consensus is, no, he's not. I mean, you know, he's from Murray State. They still have that mindset. They're over that now. That's done.
That's
like,
gone.
Okay, that's it. But it helps Murray State.
Yeah, you saw his windmill dunk.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Because you see kids, because they're always thinking, I might be that next John Morant when they're thinking of a college choice.
Yeah.
Because Ja's got a ton of talent, but the kids, how much did the coaches help? Did he help some? A lot? Did they don't know. I'm just telling you, it certainly does help. And I think the coaches, they helped a lot, but he does have, and Matt said it best, he has generational talent.
Yep.
Generational talent. But my son always likes for me to say this, we'll never see anything like that again. Because the last time I said it, first time I said it was in 2010 when we won 31 games.
Right.
2 years later, won 31. And then I said, we'll never see anything like that again, get a 25-game winning streak. Like, whoa, okay. Well, I know we'll never have anything more exciting than that. And then there's a Ja Morant year. So, you just never know with Murray State basketball. It's a monster. Mark Godfrey said it best. It's a monster, and you have to feed the monster. And Matt's feeding the monster pretty well. He has the most 20-win seasons, tied with two other coaches in Murray State history. And I hope he's around to break that record. I'd like to see him do that.
It's extremely possible. Last couple of quick notes, and I'll let you get out of here. We've got Cameron Payne playing really well in January. He does have a wrist sprain right now. He was 2 for 5 in 7 minutes in a win against Indiana on January 22nd. Did sprain his wrist and was out a couple of weeks. Will be out a couple of weeks. Got about another week left. Shameless plug. Did get a chance. Really lucky chance to talk to Cameron Payne for about 15 minutes. Do check that out if you get a chance.
It's a good interview. I liked a lot of the things he said. Talked about the work that he did to get it. And I loved what he had to say about Murray. That was very nice, too.
Yeah, and what he had to say about Memphis. I was really, really interested to hear. One of the number one things that he said, and I may write about it later, is if Ja walks in to your workout gym, you know you're about to play some pretty up-tempo, serious basketball. That even the shoot-arounds, competitive. You're not going to you're not wasting your time. You're not just there just like, oh, we're going to jack around and take a few shots and play some pickup ball. It's like, no, we're gonna compete. We're going to take shirts off. It's going to be shirts and skins. We're going to sweat it out, and we're going to play some basketball, which I found to be really interesting, to say the least. But just a quick mention, Cam actually, after a slow start to the season, injury, not shooting well, you know, probably some fatigue, whatever, and making the NBA Finals, playing really well in January. So when he comes back, he'll be looking to build on a January in which he was shooting 45% from the field, 43% from three, 88% from the stripe, averaging about 10 points per game, taking the most shots in his career, you know, as a utility backup energy guy, whatever you want to call it, behind Chris Paul and Devin Booker. And he was shooting 45, 43, and 88 in the month of January splits before his injury. So, and again, that's for the Phoenix Suns, who are the best team in the league statistically right now, based on record, right there with Golden State and the Memphis Grizzlies, who, by the way, are all in the West. Yeah. So who the hell knows who's going to win the conference title to go to the NBA Finals? I have no idea. I can say this. The Memphis Grizzlies have won 10 or more games against the top four teams in the West. Does that equate to playoff success? I don't know.
Well, it doesn't mean anything once the season ends.
That's right.
Other than seeding, nothing means anything. You just play the games and try to win them.
Absolutely. Well, Neil, it's been fun. It's been real. It's been real fun. I appreciate catching up with you. I know things do slow down a little bit, at least.
We could still do some interviews, but the next 2 weeks we're a little busy.
Yeah.
With Stratomatic Draft.
Yep.
And then there's a football game the next week or something.
You a big Super Bowl. Yeah.
I'm not a huge NFL fan, but I'm a huge fan of deer chili and sausage balls, and that'll be available at the Super Bowl thing I'm going to. So
yep, don't blame you there.
Games are relevant. If it's a good one, fantastic. If not, it's fantastic. Who's playing? Don't care.
Just want the food wrapped around.
I want the food. That's it.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Another quick shameless plug.
All right.
There is also an interview with Dr. Bob Jackson. If you missed that, you're interested in some of the nuances of the Missouri Valley, maybe some of the inroads that they were working through. I think the number one point that he and I made was that this process, I think a lot of people, Neil, asking just through social media, so on and so forth, hey, man, we had this conversation in 2017. Why did we have to have it again? Because there was a new Missouri Valley commissioner and a new president at Murray State University and a new athletic director.
Yeah.
Everybody had to get to know each other again.
Yeah.
Everybody was a new face. Just because the black book exists doesn't mean you just, you know, Bob and Alan didn't necessarily hand that over.
Yeah.
You know, new leadership means new directions. And so, you know, that conversation may have never happened again, but then it did, and you had to get everybody around the table and say, listen, what are we looking at? And that's where we are. So I thought that was a really key point. That and the invite. You and I have said that time and again. The invite had to come, and Dr. Bob Jackson iterated that one more time.
Well, I'm looking forward to many aspects of it. One aspect I am not looking forward to, last Wednesday we boarded the bus to Tennessee Tech. It was 15, Ed.
15, and that's here.
In Murray. In Cedar Falls, it was minus 15, 30 degrees colder. So we'll deal with a little bit of that stuff.
A full freezing
degree.
Like
30 degrees.
Not 32 degrees, negative 15.
Like today, felt nice today. It was 47. So it's 30 degrees warmer than that. So 30 degrees colder than 15. Yeah. So there will be a little bit of that that I'll deal with for a while, and then other people will deal with somewhere down the road.
Better get the hand warmers.
There you go.
Neil, appreciate the time, man.
Glad to be with you.